Hello and welcome to episode 444.
No, just keep going. Keep going. We're laughing
Hello
from the post-episode talk. You'll hear it in like an hour 45, 50, 210.
Oh, please, but I mean, there's an
After
NBA.
the 2024 year in review, of
There's
course.
an NBA Cup game coming in an hour 40, so that's your deadline. Hello and welcome to, actually, no, it's coming in an hour 10. I forgot what time it's starting.
Oh, shit. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA. You know ID in the town all day. ID in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 444 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the first place and Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks. It's the Julio edition.
It's the Jay-Z edition, 444.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Also, a shout out to Michael Cage.
Yeah, Michael Cage.
I feel like he's in there too.
Shout out to Michael Cage.
Always shout out to Michael Cage. All right, let's get into it
Oh,
since
okay.
we now have been given our time deadline.
Deadline.
We're starting this week on a sad note by remembering David Bonderman, the founding owner of the Kraken, who died Wednesday at age 82. A native of LA, Bonderman got his undergraduate degree at University of Washington, and this is something that the Kraken shared in their post announcing his passing. While he was at UW, he worked at the Space Needle as a security guard,
There we go.
and then later reconnected with Seattle as part of the group that brought the NHL here. His daughter, Samantha Holloway, had previously assumed his role as executive chair and principal team owner, as well as the leader of the group attempting to bring the Sonics back to Seattle. So, I would say, as sad as this is, I don't expect it to have an impact on that element of things. But, certainly David Bonderman's legacy is going to be very important in Seattle sports for his role in bringing the Kraken here and potentially laying the groundwork to bring the NBA and the Sonics back here as well. So definitely sad news on Wednesday. All right, and in an actual happier toast, first off, congrats, question mark, to the Sounders on qualifying for the 2025 CONCACAF Champions Cup by virtue of the LA Galaxy beating the New York Red Bulls in MLS Cup, meaning the Sounders were among the three highest placed MLS teams who hadn't already qualified for the Champions Cup by another route. It is the first appearance for the Sounders since they won what was then the CONCACAF Champions League in 2022, but adds to a busy summer.
They got a cup.
Now it is officially, yes. I can't remember whether you could drink out of the CONCACAF Champions League trophy before it was officially a cup. The Sounders were drawn against Guatemalan side Antigua, making its second ever appearance, but in the same side of the bracket is several Liga MX giants, including Club America. So it may not be a long run for the Sounders and CONCACAF Champions Cup this time around, but that's okay because they've got other cups to play for next summer, as we'll talk about later in the pod. And then our other toast this week, congrats to Zach Charbonnet, chosen the FedEx Ground Player of the Week, which is definitely a real award that exists, after rushing for 134 yards Sunday in place of the injured Ken Walker III.
The Seahawks are winning all sorts of awards these last weeks.
Yes, this is a little less traditional than the NFC Defensive Player of the Weeks that they've won the last 2 weeks.
But definitely deserved for Charbonnet.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to talk about his performance here, or wait till we talk about the Seahawks?
Are we doing this? Are we going to do this emergency pod style about the Seahawks game or
I don't
no?
feel like it.
All right. Yeah,
I feel like it's pretty
I don't
remote.
feel like it either. The way that you said it, it wasn't like I don't think we should put this in this part of the podcast. It was as if you just didn't feel like talking about the Seahawks game this week.
Well, I saw literally 0 seconds
Oh
of the
my God.
Seahawks
Try watching sports sometime.
game. I am finally living down to the stereotypes.
Yeah.
I have not been watching a lot of sports lately.
You just got it. You're not a ball knower like me and Timmy Chalamet. You know what I mean? Like,
Did you see? I'm going to go out on a limb that you don't follow my ESPN colleague Tim Bontemps, and I guess this was on Twitter, not on Blue Sky, since he hasn't posted there. So the people posted this photo of Timothy Chalamet getting Amare Stoudemire's autograph after a Broadway performance during Stoudemire's free agency when he signed with the Knicks. And in the background of the photo is a young Tim Bontemps.
Wow. Okay.
So there you go. Do we have Coach's Corner this week?
No.
Okay. All right, well, let's get into the Mariners,
Oh.
who jumped up 12 spots
Hello.
in the lottery to the number three pick in the 2025 MLB draft, which will be their highest since taking Mike Zunino in 2012.
The most important thing about this was we had just been waiting for months for this draft lottery. It is something that all year long you're thinking about in
We
baseball.
definitely anticipated, knew was coming.
Yeah, we had it on our radar. Look, you don't watch sports anymore, but what you do pay attention to is the MLB draft lottery. And
Well, look, it's part of Transact.
your lifelong dream of seeing the Mariners bust the MLB draft lottery that we definitely knew was a thing and knew was coming. But
Lifelong fans of the MLB draft lottery, really.
this was huge. Honestly, this was a huge moment for the Mariners to have the season they have. And I'm going to go out here and I'm going to posit something. Despite everything, the Mariners deserve this.
Oh, wow.
If anybody, this is, if anybody deserves to, like, they didn't get the number one pick, right? They didn't go too far. Number three is good, but the Mariners have been, and I've said this over and over again, too good
It's true.
somehow over the last couple of decades to have gotten players in this range. What year was the Zunino draft? 2012, you said?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say 2 decades is maybe a little bit too far. Let's say that the Mariners have been too good for the last decade, but they have not ended up in this type of position because a lot of years, they're never making the playoffs. Don't get me wrong. But the Mariners sometimes, weirdly often, are competing for the playoffs and so haven't found themselves in this position.
They have picked
And
one time in the top 10 since 2014. So in the last 11 drafts, they have picked in the top 10 one time, even though they went through ostensibly a giant rebuild during that period of time. So that was the Emerson Hancock. They took number six in 2020, which was after the first year of that. And then, they were competitive during that abbreviated 2020 season, ended up with the 12th pick that year and took a young man named Harry Ford.
there we go.
So, yeah, I think you're spot on about this. Like there
I'm
was a
spot
period
on about them earning it.
yes, deserving it. There was a period
Deserving.
between 2009 and 2012. They picked second, no, did not have a first round pick in the regular 2010 draft because if they must have forfeited it, and then second in 2011, third in 2012, which obviously stocked the future core of the next Mariners contender with Dustin Ackley, Danny Holson, and Mike Zunino.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was looking at this player. I was like, man, he could be the next Holton. it might be, truly, if they draft a left-handed pitcher. But the funny thing about this also was, as I was spending all those months just scouting, waiting for the draft lottery, all of a sudden, as the Mariners got the third pick, moved up in the lottery, I was then subsequently mad that they didn't move even higher.
Oh, wow.
Things could never be good enough to be in. And you really look at this draft and you're like, man, that's a two-player draft of these players that I definitely had heard of before yesterday. So you see Ethan Holliday, you see Jace LaViolette, and you're like, oh yeah, the Mariners need one of those two, but they're stuck at third, and you never want to be third in a two-player draft. Bunch of pitchers after that. But no, actually, what this baseball season, like, we're gonna actually, to some extent, to the mildest extent, pay a
No.
little bit of attention to college baseball.
You can do that. I don't know that I'm gonna have the bandwidth for that one.
If all of a sudden, which you can't even watch fucking Seahawks games, so of course you don't have the bandwidth for it. But all of a sudden, if it's like, wow, Jace LaViolette's doing amazing things, that's going to be a thing we're going to pay attention to, at least the slightest bit. Xavier Nayans out of Mount Vernon High School, going to Oregon State, I believe, for a year is how it's
Wait.
going to work.
Hold on. Is Ethan Holliday's dad the GM? Does he work for the Nationals? Oh no, I guess
I thought it
I'm
was Matt
misunderstanding.
Holliday, right?
Yeah, it's Matt Holliday.
Is he the GM of the Nats?
No, he isn't. I'm misunderstanding this.
Obvious, I think So having the opportunity, somebody like that being a top 10 player from Washington State, not that far away, the Mariners now have a chance to almost certainly draft him if that's something that they wanted to do. And we'll see what shakes out during this baseball season and what it looks like. But this kind of can transform the Mariners. The prospects that they have a number of good prospects, the Mariners overall. What they don't have in the organization is an elite prospect. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I suppose so.
And this is an opportunity. I'm not saying it's likely. This is an opportunity for them to go out in this draft with this third pick and do something that wasn't really a possibility beforehand and possibly draft a player who ends up being, if things go well, could be an elite level talent, at least in the farm system that, you know, and having team control for somebody like that is a huge deal. Like the number one way you see all this money being thrown around in free agency, the number one way to avoid that is by drafting players, right? Drafting players, cultivating a farm system. Like this is a, it is probably any individual pick is not that big of a deal, but having a good pick like this is a pretty big deal. So I went and glanced at some of the third overall picks, and there definitely are some all-stars in there. There's some Hall of Fame caliber players in that third overall pick. Obviously Mike Zunino back in 2012, but, and even Zunino had a major league career, right?
Yeah.
If you're talking about a little bit later in the first round, even being to the, in the majors is not really guaranteed. It's also not guaranteed with the third overall pick, but it's like Manny Machado, Trevor Bauer, obviously question marks, but Eric Hosmer, Evan Longoria, Troy Gloss was drafted third. The Mariners drafted Jose Cruz third way back in the day. So there are Hall of Fame level players that have been taken at this pick. And then a lot of players that you've never fucking heard of, because that's how it goes in baseball. So
yep.
I saw this. It kind of made me excited. For the first time, I think maybe in my entire life, I was a little bit excited about the MLB draft.
There you go. Well, I look forward to you paying attention to it.
Were you not?
No, I mean, I'm excited about the Mariners moving up. I don't know that I'm excited about the MLB draft specifically.
I'm like, we already are following Gerangelo Sanja. You know what I mean? Like, if there's a high-end player, like, that is somebody we're going to be tracking through the farm system.
Yeah.
And how they do. The third overall pick. Like, that is a player we're going to be tracking more than almost anybody else. Like, if the Mariners would have drafted, was the original pick 15, 17?
15.
15. So with that 15th pick, it'd be like, oh, that's a nice player to add, but ultimately, you know, like you don't expect that much from them. And this is somebody who you could hypothetically have some expectations for and could hypothetically be a very good player. I'm curious to see where they go. And I'm sure they'll probably just approach it as the best player that they see available. But I'm excited about it. I also am excited about the amount of talent from Washington State. That there are star players from Washington State that it wouldn't be unreasonable to draft with the third pick, depending on how the season goes.
The thing about Jose Cruz Jr. is even though we think of him as not living up to the expectations that we had for him when he was with the Mariners as a rookie, and especially when they traded him to Toronto, like he ranks 11th in career WAR among number three picks.
Really?
Yeah.
What is,
so there is a pretty steep drop off.
The top five. A lot of players I named.
You mentioned Longoria and Machado. Did you mention Paul Molitor?
No, I didn't. I mean, that's
both Paul Molitor and Robin Yount drafted by the Brewers with the number three pick
really?
4 years apart. That's a pretty wild pair of number three picks. The number top two all
Steve
time,
Avery
obviously,
was
both Hall of
Famers. Number three pick, right?
He is not that high in terms of WAR. He is behind Jose Cruz Jr. So Longoria, Machado, and Matt Williams round out the list.
Oh yeah.
So there you go.
They should draft a third baseman.
Yeah, the moral of the story, a third baseman or a shortstop. One or the other.
I mean, or Xavier Nanes, I believe, is a third baseman.
Troy Gloss makes it six of the top seven were drafted as either third baseman or shortstops.
Interesting. That's right, the Mariners are set at third base.
Despite the record-setting Juan Soto deal on the eve of the winter meetings and a handful of big pitching deals, feels like free agency is moving pretty slowly, and possibly one reason for that is Roki Sasaki and everyone waiting to see what he might do. He has officially been posted. His agent Joel Wolf spoke to reporters at the MLB winter meetings, said officially that he will sign after January 15th. So all 30 teams are in play, hypothetically, in terms of having bonus money available to spend from their international pool to sign him. And this from the Seattle Times story by Adam Jude is for what Sasaki might want from an MLB club. He has asked Wolf questions about the weather, comfortability, and pitching development. So I don't know
Okay.
exactly what comfortability translates into. Does he like
Comfortability.
flannel? You know, just we need to make sure that Roki Sasaki knows that Seattle weather is very different in July than it is in December or January if he's paying a visit. You know, this is not what it's going to be like during the season.
That's a good point. How different is it, is weather-wise, Japan versus Seattle?
That's a great question. Japan is a large, diverse, climatologically diverse country.
Okay.
He's been pitching for Chiba Latte, that actually a city? Chiba City.
Okay.
Let's see the
Yeah, let's find out the weather of Chiba City right now,
it's definitely a
live
thing I
on the air.
attempted to look up here. The average daily high 85 in July, 88 in August, never goes below 50. So
Little bit closer to like San Francisco then.
yeah, that seems like a reasonable. I mean, it never gets quite that hot in
Yeah,
San
San Francisco never
Francisco,
gets that
but
hot, but it's a more moderate comfortability. But I believe his agent also mentioned that it might make sense for him to have a softer landing spot than a major market. It
he
was a
did say
little bit
that.
of, and it's funny when agents say things because it's specifically said. I don't know if this is intentional or not. To make the fan bases of every other team who are not the Mets, the Yankees, the Dodgers, excited about the possibility of signing Roki Sasaki.
Oh, yeah. Or the Padres, who I guess, I mean, the Padres are already excited.
That's why I
That
said who are
probably makes it
not.
even more excited.
Yes. I
But
mean, it could have meant San Diego's the place.
wink. He's
San
going to be there
Diego
with Yu Darvish.
ultimately makes a lot of sense for Roki Sasaki.
But how is the weather there?
Hey, comfortability though.
Unclear. It's a very nebulous term.
Has Roki Sasaki seen Frasier? Does anybody know the answer to that? Okay. I'm here to tell you right
You think
now.
Frasier was big in Japan?
I'm asking the questions.
I'm gonna Google this now.
No,
Frasier,
you're not.
Japan. He can't. Someone
Think
in
of
our
all the
Japan life
Emmys.
can't seem to find Frasier on any of the streaming platforms.
Wow. There is one spot for Roki Sasaki to sign. And I don't say this biased at all. That is Seattle, Washington. It is such an obvious landing spot based upon those general stipulations. Comfortability being something I'm not exactly sure what it means, but quality of life in Seattle, Washington, quite high overall. And most important is it is a secondary market. It's not a major market. You're not competing with the Los Angeles Dodgers in your division. And that is something that everybody involved is aware of. For the Padres to win the NL West is so extraordinarily difficult. The AL West, however, is wide open. There's no team that's running away with it. The Astros seem like they're getting worse overall, right? This is a di division that can be won by the Mariners, and there is no better ball club. If there is one thing that the Mariners have done right in the last 10 years, and literally there's one, it is developing pitching. The
Hard to argue
Mariners
there.
have developed young pitching. They have turned players. They're taking Brian Wu from Double A, Bryce Miller from Double A into star level players. And say what you will about the batter's eye and trying to sign hitting free agents. If you want to go out and make yourself a lot of money on that second deal, go pitch in Seattle because people will strike out all the time, even if they're good. Between
Don't tell him if they're working on the batter's eye thing.
the marine layer and the batter's eye, Roki Sasaki would be dominant in Seattle. And we've got Ichiro out there pitching him. So I'm saying this. I said this on the Discord. I'm vowing right now, right in this moment. This is borderline Mariners hot takes level. If the Mariners sign Roki Sasaki, whether publicly Ichiro is involved in it or not, I am officially in on Ichiro. I will view every stat that I now view negatively. I said a couple weeks that I was in. people pushed back on me on the Discord, which, by the way, if you're not on the Discord, get on the Discord. Anyway, people pushed back against it. They were like, oh, Ichiro's great for all these reasons. And then I went back into hater mode. I couldn't help it. I went back into hater mode. So I'm starting from that perspective right now. But if the Mariners, if Ichiro delivers us Roki Sasaki, I am in on Ichiro forever. First ballot Hall of Famer should be unanimous. However,
the stakes are high.
However, if the Mariners do not sign Roki Sasaki, it is all for naught. And Ichiro's tenure clearly didn't translate to the playoffs very often. Translated to the playoff time. They haven't made any statues for that one just yet. I'm sure they will soon. It'll have been a complete loss. If everything that Ichiro accomplished in Seattle is a cool play, much worse than Ken Griffey Jr., a playoff, and not Roki Sasaki long-term, what was he even doing?
And not Shohei. Wow.
Not Shohei either.
Wow.
So, but I'm telling you, I feel like there's a chance. We'll see what bookies.com has to say about it later, but like Taylor Swift at these Easter eggs. Yeah, we'll see. You would know better than me. Sorry.
I was
watching football over the weekend, but you know,
Had a lovely conversation with the border agent about the Seahawks game. He was unconvinced that it was over. I told him it was the 2-minute warning. The Seahawks were up and about to kick a field goal. He was not hearing that the game was over. Not ready to hear it.
Like the game, like he didn't, he was still nervous or?
Yes.
Okay. I thought we had a game is not over type situation.
I mean, fair point. Every blade of grass.
I was not too stressed at that point, but you know. If you're a border agent, maybe you're nervous all the time.
The line wasn't moving that fast. Perhaps he was asking other people for updates about the Seahawks game as well.
Every single person who came through.
I was wearing a Seahawks hoodie, so it was a natural. Although it took me a second. He was like, are you tracking it? Which isn't what I would have, like, I would, like, if, have you been following it? I would have gotten, you know, or the game or something. But it took me a while to understand that that's what he was asking about.
Anyway, Roki Sasaki is coming to Seattle.
I think the odds are he's not coming to Seattle.
Play this clip, because I've got an I told you so to say later about the Seahawks too.
All right. Into the roundup, Seattle Kraken ended up winning 3 of 4 on their road trip, all by multiple goals. They returned home Tuesday with a shootout loss to the defending Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers. Kraken still not very good at shootouts. But positive to get a point out of that one. This homestand lasts 3 more games through next Tuesday. Kraken currently tied for 10th in the West, entering play Wednesday, but 8th with an even goal differential. So it still seems like there's a better Kraken team in here than we've seen consistently on the ice. Seattle Sounders' biggest update from their postseason press conference, GM Craig Weibel said, we're not interested in moving to Obed Vargas this winter, so Obed will be with us, and he'll be competing with us, and he'll continue his growth. It was still very plausible that the Sounders end up moving him at the summer transfer window when it's a little bit easier for international clubs to make that kind of a spend, but he will at least start the 2025 season with the Sounders is the anticipation. A busy season where we mentioned they will be starting out in the CONCACAF World Cup, the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They will also be in the FIFA Club World Cup, and the draw for that was held last week. The Sounders were drawn with Atletico Madrid, Botafogo from Brazil, and a club named PSG. I don't know if you're familiar with them. In games to be played starting next June 15th, is one of the host venues. Lumen Field will also host matchups between River Plate, Inter Milan, and Japanese side Urawa Red Diamonds. So some big games coming to Seattle in advance of 2026 World Cup, when we're going to see some even bigger games here. A lot of notable soccer coming to Seattle over the next 2 summers. There is yet another MLS expansion draft coming Wednesday night. Do you want to guess what city the MLS is expanding to?
Is already Detroit, or was there a team in Detroit already?
There's not a team in Detroit, but that is not the answer.
Oh, Sacramento is out, right?
Sacramento is out. Yeah, they're strictly a baseball city. And obviously the Sacramento Kings.
Can you give me a region?
You were in the correct region with Sacramento.
Oh. There's another like Bay Area-ish team?
Well, California was the region.
California? Is there a
Yes.
San Diego team already? No, right?
That is the answer. San Diego FC coming online in
Roki Sasaki is
2025.
not signing there.
Just three Sounders players under contract will be available to them in that draft to be held Wednesday night. Defender Jonathan Bell, forward Danny Musovski, and midfielder Bradulio Rodriguez.
When
So
you did your mock MLS expansion draft, I know you've been waiting years for it. How did it go?
I did not have any of them being selected. I think you only take like six players now.
Honestly, if I'm sure that there is a ESPN senior writer, Kevin Pelton of MLS, right?
I have to imagine there is.
I don't know whether they're feasting right now because they're loving all of these mock MLS expansion drafts, or whether they're just like too much
They're
people.
jaded by it.
Yeah, they're
By
like, I
the
can't.
time that we get to like 25, 24 teams in the WNBA by 2032, I'm going to be like, all right, enough already, people.
Yeah, we've had enough of this. The most
Did
annoying
you
thing
know
about
that?
it.
Okay, well, should we
Did I know
transition
what?
to the
Wait, no,
WNBA
no.
expansion draft?
I have two questions for you. A statement and a question. The most annoying thing about the MLS expanding is that I feel like the Sounders never play these teams. Every week you're just like, and they play Vancouver again, and they're playing Portland. Like literally all they do is play teams along the West Coast.
I don't think that's the case. That was the case during 2020 when they were like in pods and everything. But no, they've played St. Louis City SC, as you know, many times.
Many times?
Yeah.
I feel like they play them like maybe once per year. And
I mean,
something
if
they
you're talking
didn't
about
play
the East
Miami at
Cone,
all,
yeah, I
right?
mean, they don't play the Eastern Conference very often.
What is, I don't do not understand the structure of MLS.
I believe you play every East team once a year.
But they didn't
And
play
then,
Miami at all, did they? Or did they go at Miami this year?
I guess you're right. I don't know that they did play
It's like
Miami
the
this year at
fucking
all.
Big Ten or something, MLS.
Well, at least they don't have the number in the team in the name of the conference. No, the Sounders did not play Miami at all this year, so I don't know how often you play East teams. But I think you generally play West teams twice. So they'll play San Diego plenty. Is
Okay.
presumably San Diego will end up in the Western Conference.
Fine. Have you ever heard of this movie? Can you see that?
No. Oh, yeah. I've seen that movie. I saw it in the theaters. Problemista.
What do you think?
I thought it was quite enjoyable.
All
Tilda
right.
Swinton was outstanding.
But the RZA.
All
Okay.
right. So transitioning to the WNBA expansion draft, the Storm were the only team not to have a player selected by the Golden State Valkyries, who chose to pass instead of presumably taking Mackenzie Holmes. We don't know. You know, they
So
did not make the
embarrassing for
protected
her.
list public, but presumably the Storm chose to protect Nika Mühl over Holmes, their third round pick in last year's draft, and Golden State was like, nope, we're good on that one. I went 0 for 12 in my WNBA
Wow.
mock expansion
Do
draft.
you even mock WNBA expansion draft, bro?
I bet Timothy Chalamet would have gotten at least one.
Oh, bro, Timmy's a ball knower, you know what I mean? Like Timmy would have gotten probably he would have run the table.
When he
You
started
being on
talking
there
about
is
like
like
the quarterback at like Southern or something, it was like, oh, like
he
there had to have
has
been somebody
notes. It's
researching for
yeah,
this.
he researched it or
Yeah.
whatever, had a person. It's not like he can just fucking pull out the quarterback at Southern. I was
No, it's
talking with Luca
impressive.
yesterday. He said the most in I think I've mentioned this on the podcast. The most insulting thing I ever said to him was when I yelled learn football when he said that whether a 2-point conversion didn't matter or not. If they got it, whether there should have been a penalty on 2-point conversion, and I stand by it. And I said I wanted to have children who are ball knowers like Timmy, but
Well,
if this
your
was,
middle son knows ball now, thanks to the Simpsons episode, right?
oh
The
yeah,
Simpsons broadcast, I should
did
say.
you watch any of that?
I watched almost all of it. Like the
Really?
last 2 minutes when I was trying to figure out why Dallas was not getting the ball back and Brandon Aubrey was not getting a chance to kick a field goal that would have very likely sent me to the fantasy playoffs.
Wow.
Then I switched over to the main broadcast, but
Okay, so congrats to Mina for being part of it.
huge, just awesome.
I don't think this is a proximity thing because there are a lot of us around the country who have about the same knowledge of The Simpsons, but it's kind it really is like one of us made it. You know what I mean? Like Mina's knowledge of The Simpsons, I feel like I'm more knowledgeable about The Simpsons than you are. No offense.
No, I think that's fair.
This isn't Taylor Swift in Vancouver, so But
I mean, look, I'd already seen the movie, so I already knew the Taylor Swift concert better than you did.
yeah, that's true. But I feel like Mina's knowledge is like pretty much precisely the same as my knowledge of The Simpsons, and I bet she stopped watching at almost precisely the same time. Because it's so funny that like the references that they're making on the show, which they get it, but like it's mostly to episodes that are 25 years old or
Yes.
something. Like The Simpsons is technically still on the air, but also The Simpsons hasn't been on the air since like 1999. I don't know what the exact date it is, like what season precisely. There's the season one episode where the first episode is about lard. And I'm like, I was still watching at this point, but it was getting like a little. I was like, there's still a, because Luke has been rewatching it. Well, by rewatching it, I mean watching.
Correct.
And he got to that season, and I was like, things get like a little dicey here. I've seen all of these, but like the quality is definitely lowering. And that is like Mina, every reference is like a first 10 seasons Simpsons reference. And I was thinking about how strange that is for a show that, again, is technically still on the air, but none of the references have anything to do with the past, probably like, I guess I'll say at least 15 seasons of The Simpsons.
Okay, so it looked like Mina posted in the, I think, I can't remember if she posted this on social media or if it was in the video she posted, that she bought a Simpsons episode guide and was reviewing it to like refresh her memory on some of the references.
I bet I had the exact same one. You know the
It
one.
looked very familiar. Apparently, there are like multiple installments of it.
Well, yeah, they've been on for, wait, what season are they on right now?
I don't know a lot.
I'm sure that there are multiple installments, but I remember the exact book. Zach Muncy came to school with it, and I was like, I need this.
The
I need this
Simpsons:
thing.
A Complete Guide to Our Favorite Family. Does that sound right?
I don't. I'd have to look at the cover. I
It was
think
the
they're,
first 8 seasons, according to
that's,
this.
yeah, they're on season 36.
Very old.
Oh
As if
my
you're aware of
God.
this.
That doesn't even make me feel old. It just makes me feel bad for The Simpsons. But that sounds right. Let me see if this is it. Yep, that's the one. I read every single page of this. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah, of course. I'm a completist.
Yeah. You're a ball knower.
And
Printed
by
in
ball,
1997.
you
There were good
mean
episodes after 1997.
monorail jokes from the Simpsons episode?
Yeah.
There weren't enough Shelbyville references for my taste. I would have appreciated a few more of those.
Season 10, that's, it's literally the season after that book came out, that, which is also hilarious. So I'm like, people, this is like an amazing show, right? 26 of the seasons, I'm like, they verge from like unwatchable to semi-watchable. I feel like it actually starts becoming unwatchable probably around like 2004, but through the like the first 9 seasons, at season 10, it's kind of like, this is, it's a different show at that point. So,
All right. Well, anyways.
anyway, I was impressed with Mina. Just even having that opportunity is pretty awesome.
Oh, without question. UW basketball. The women open Big Ten play Sunday with a 73-62 loss to number one UCLA at home. Down just 8 entering the fourth quarter. UCLA, though, shot 54% behind 23 points on 10 of 16 shooting from Lauren Betts, 18 points from Kiki Rice. And although four Huskies scored double figures led by 19 points from Ella Dean, they shot just 40% from the field. Ultimately, too big a difference for them to overcome against the number one team in the country. They will play another non-conference game on Saturday versus Utah, because that's a thing that's a non-conference game now, much like the UW men hosting Washington State next week. Utah longtime head coach Lynn Roberts stepped down last month to become the head coach of the Los Angeles Sparks. Associate head coach Gavin Peterson stepped up to replace her as head coach. 4-1 at the time, the Utes are 4-1 since, with a huge upset of number three Notre Dame on Grand Cayman Island during tournament play. They rank 28th on BartTorvik.com and are among teams receiving votes in both rankings, led by guard Gianna Neipkins, who's returned from a season-ending broken foot last December to average a team-high 16.9 points per game. Not quite the same powerhouse they were the last 2 seasons, led by Alyssa Pealey, who's now in the WNBA, was among the players not drafted by the Golden State Valkyries in the expansion draft. But still a formidable team. Check out the Discord for some additional notes on Ute, the Utes women's basketball team.
I freaking love that.
Also, an extended discussion about Daniel Kahneman. There's just all sorts of things on the Discord. The relative finances of various major American coastal cities. That wasn't a thing I knew I needed to know
I don't even
about.
think I saw that one.
Yeah, look, it moves fast in there.
What channel was that on?
Kraken. No, I think it was the sides.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, it would have been totally reasonable if it was on the Kraken channel. I would not have been shocked.
What were we discussing in the Seahawks channel? Oh, yes. Like failed vice presidential candidates.
That went astray.
Or failed presidential primary runs, I believe, is where we started with Paul Tsongas prominent among it. And then we tied it back together with Jeff and Jack Kemp. So there you go. Our UW men's basketball. Their first Big Ten home game did not go as well. It was also a loss to a team from LA, but not nearly as competitive as they lost to the USC Trojans 85-61, trailing 51-25 at halftime, with the Trojans shooting twice as well from the field, 70% to 34% for the Huskies. Mekhi Mason was the only UW player to score more than 10 points in that game. Great Osabor had 9 on 4 of 11 shooting, while three Trojans scored at least 19 points, including Wesley Yates III, who finally made his debut at Heck Ed after sitting out his freshman season with the Huskies. The Huskies did bounce back Tuesday versus an Eastern Washington team that entered 2-8 under former Gonzaga coach Dan Monson. Mekhi Mason got the start, scored a team high 23 points, knocking down 5 3-pointers. Osabor had 16 points, Tyler Harris 15, and Zoom Diallo 14 on perfect 6 of 6 shooting. This time it was the Huskies who shot 70% after halftime. They'll now have the next week off. I originally wrote in the notes that it was for finals, but finals week is already close to over, so a little strange timing to have the weekend off. Are
You're
you
just gonna
football?
yada 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 over the USC game.
I mean, what else is there to say?
This was a game that the Huskies
Did
were
you watch this
favoring.
game?
Are you speaking of the Simpsons? Are you aware of the Grandpa Simpson meme where he walks in, sees that parts of the door, and walks out?
I
That was
referenced that
me
meme the other
in
day.
this UW game. I was going on the treadmill and I was like, I'm gonna have the college football game on. And I'm going to have this at the same time. I was going to have a whole multimedia experience. I pulled up the Husky game. I saw the score and I was like, you know what? I'm good. I just need media experience, not multimedia experience. This was a game that they were favored in. And one college basketball game is not that big of a deal overall. But right now, this season and this program is in a complete state of disarray. That loss to USC was, it reminded me the
A
most.
complete state of disarray?
What
I don't
is it
know.
not?
I mean, it was a
I mean, yes.
perplexing outcome. Like it came out of nowhere, I guess is what I would say.
I mean,
Because they had been competitive against a much better UCLA team on the road.
I agree that it was a perplexing outcome.
They dropped 27 spots in KenPom with that
Yeah,
result.
that's bad.
I
But
agree.
you don't
Not
drop
a fan.
27 spots in KenPom arbitrarily. You do
No.
it by playing badly. So,
I know, but like I don't know that there's like a grand lesson to take other than
it was one of the worst. It reminded me of losing to fucking Montana with Jimmy Lake. It was just like, oh, this is bad.
what about losing to Montana as UW men's basketball under Mike Hopkins?
That happened all the time.
Not all the time, but it did happen. I mean, so what was strange about that game, I guess I would say, is that the UW defense has been remarkably consistent this season. They had not, like, the UCLA game had been the most points per possession they'd allowed all season at 1.07 to that date. And then USC scored 1.23 points per possession, shot an effective 71%. Only two teams had been above 50% EFG. Like, it's just like such an outlier offensively. Like, we know the offense is mediocre, bad for a Big Ten school, but we thought the defense was pretty good until then.
I will still, I mean, the game yesterday, I was just like, I'm good. I don't care, actually.
There was not a lot of excitement, not a lot of buzz on the Discord for that one.
Turns out I'm not interested. I mean, after that USC loss, it was just, they're just not a good team. You know, like I will be so happy if they turn it around. But right now, there's not much going right. We had that Acrisure Invitational, you know?
We'll always have the Acrisure Invitational.
Yeah, those are forever. But I am already nervous about Danny Sprinkle. And he's played two conference games.
I mean, look, the recruiting has been good.
The
That's,
recruiting
I
has
think,
been
more
good.
important than anything else long term. It's not like we don't know that Danny Sprinkle can coach successful teams. He has coached successful teams.
Maybe there's just something wrong with UW.
I think there is something wrong with it, UW, and
Is
it's
there a
called a
batter's eye
lack of
problem?
shooting.
But like, yeah, is there like a reason that people can't shoot at Bank of America Arena, Alaska Airlines Arena? What's it called?
No, because these guys couldn't shoot at their previous stops
They
either.
can't ever shoot.
Like we looked at the team and we said they've changed the coach again. At one point last night, I did watch the second half of that after the NBA Cup action ended. Eldridge Krasner accidentally referred to Danny Sprinkle as Mike Hopkins, and it was like meet the new boss, same as the old boss. But no, like the coach has changed from Romar to Hopkins to Sprinkle, and yet the skills, the strengths and weaknesses of the team remain the same all the time.
I was telling Luca about having a number. He didn't know who Lorenzo Romar was, which, like, I failed as a parent. I'm sorry.
Wow.
But
I'm talking about not knowing ball.
I feel like he was lying about not knowing who Lorenzo Romar was. But I was like, he led us to a number one seed. And Luca was like, the Huskies had a number one seed.
I mean,
And I was like,
it is pretty, like, even being there, I'm like, the Huskies had a number one seed.
look, The Simpsons was on season like 24 when that happened. Like, it wasn't
It was
that
way
long
lower than
ago.
that. It happened 19, it was 20. This is the 20th anniversary. Like, if we were gonna do the whole we
Okay,
pick
they're
an
on
old
season
team to
18.
follow, this would
Hey,
be the 20th
honestly,
anniversary season.
you might have had an idea right there, because
I
following
don't think
Husky
we
basketball this spring is not going to be great.
I don't think we need more stuff to discuss on the podcast. I mean, this is the thing I was thinking of. Like, we're not at peak Seattle sports because obviously the Sonics are not here, but like, there's just so much Seattle sports happening all the time right now, and there's only going to be more. It's very different from those sleepy days of spring 2020 when we were remembering a season.
I just want to do anything to not think about this current Husky basketball team.
That's understandable.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe something good will happen.
UW football is officially headed to the Sun Bowl to play Louisville on New Year's Eve. Any first thoughts about playing in the Sun Bowl?
In the Sun Bowl?
Yeah.
Not really, no.
Okay. The Cardinals, for a team that's playing in the Sun Bowl, have been damn good. They have an 8-4 record, but rank 11th in FPI efficiency, 12th in FPI. However, that was all with quarterback Tyler Shough, who announced Wednesday that he will not be playing in the bowl game in preparation for the NFL draft. The Oregon transfer started all 12 games during his seventh college season, ranking 22nd in FBS and QBR. Louisville's backup QB is combined to throw 12 passes this season, so the line is down to Louisville minus 2.5 after being as high as minus 6 after that news.
Got it. Okay. Well, that definitely changes things. I mean, he's 25 years old.
There was a college basketball. I was looking for like experience through my college basketball database. There was a player last year who successfully sued the NCAA to be able to play like the last handful of games of the season in his 8th year of eligibility at age 26.
Oh, yeah, we love to see it. I remember Tyler Shough. I guess I kind of do remember him from Oregon. I probably remember him more from Texas Tech.
Right. I mean, he played a lot more there, but I think he was their starter during the 2020 season, right?
Yeah, I feel like that one was the 2020 season was. I was not watching a lot of non-Husky football that year.
Really? There wasn't a lot else going on.
I just, it was all too weird. I even remember when the Huskies started 2021, it felt pretty strange.
Yeah, because they lost to Montana.
Yeah.
That did feel strange.
Hello, players leaving for the NFL this offseason for Louisville. Spent $100 on him, $95 on him. Isaac Grendo only to get injured the following week.
Yeah,
He was
he
on the
looks like he's going to
Louisville
be
football
healthy
team
enough to
last year.
play.
And Jack Plummer. Oh, Storm Duck too. Anyway, no, I mean, looking at this Louisville team, obviously this changes things though without Tyler Shough, but they had four losses. three of them were to teams that either were in the playoff or could have, in Miami, who could have been in the playoff. I mean, beating Georgia Tech is a really good win. It happened early in the season. Going at Clemson and winning, beating Pitt, like, this is a killer Louisville team. If they were at full strength, I would posit this is possibly the fourth best team who's not in the playoff.
That's probably about right. Alabama, who else?
Ole Miss and Miami. I think those are the three best teams who are not in the playoff. And I, there's obviously some other ones, but Louisville at full strength is deceptively good. This is a different situation. Let me see, by FPI. Yeah, they're number 12 by FPI. I mean, they're better than SMU by FPI. They're better than two playoff teams, both from the ACC. You know, there's a lot of ACC kind of right there in that mix in the like 10 to 15 range. And Louisville statistically is the second best of all those teams. So it's a bummer that I'm just like, dog, you're 25 years old, you know? Like, why not just play in this game? You right. don't, you're willing to play in one last season, your 20, your age 25 season, but this one more game. I get it, he could get injured. I don't think Tyler Shook's really on the NFL radar.
That's
right now.
The thing, yeah.
It's just like, you're an undrafted free agent. Go, because it sucks for everybody to watch, because now if the Huskies win, it's kind of like, well, like, we could still do things. We can learn things about DeMond, but without their starting quarterback, things do feel a little bit, just, it takes the sting out of the game. And that ultimately is kind of like, bowl games will exist for another period of time. They were the 8th ranked offense, and their defense isn't bad. They're 29th ranked, but it was their offense that we were interested in seeing in this one.
And the running offense was also very good. Shook isn't a big part of that. So I think it will still be a test for a UW defense that has been stouter against the pass than the run. It kind of makes this more similar to a lot of the matchups they faced over the course of the season. Like, you know, I don't think they're not as good with Shook as Indiana was at full strength with Curtis Rourke, but, you know, it's kind of similar to that to a degree, I would say. And then the back quarterbacks are not as experienced as Taven Jackson, right? Is the Indiana backup. So, all right, well, lots of other UW news as we look ahead to the bowl game and beyond. Adam Schefter reported Wednesday afternoon that Bill Belichick is finalizing a deal to become head coach at the University of North Carolina, presumably with Steve Belichick as the coach in waiting there, considering that was widely reported as one of his stipulations for taking the job.
Kind of a strange one.
It was remarkable, like, on the broadcast shows over the weekend, like, everyone who had ever played for Bill Belichick was like, there's no way he's going to college. And then he went to college. So there you go.
Obviously, anticipation, Steve Belichick is going to North Carolina with his dad. I probably feel the same as everybody else, which is, it's a bummer, but it's not the end of the world. It's really hard to tell, which is partially why it probably wouldn't have mattered either way, but it's hard. It was hard this year to tell Steve Belichick's impact vis-a-vis the talent, because those things are really difficult to separate. But the defense statistically just wasn't very good. And,
well, in some statistics, as we talked about after the Oregon game a week ago, like, in terms of points allowed, the defense was really quite good. In terms of pass defense, it was quite outstanding. The rush defense was weak enough that, and then the turnovers really weren't there on a consistent basis. And those elements tended to make it not quite as good. And then the adjusting for the opponent's strength of schedule, because the Huskies faced a much stronger group of defenses than they did offenses in the Big Ten.
So, but I mean, they still ultimately ended up being ranked 45th. Statistically, like, talent-wise, should they have been in the 70s? I don't know. It's really hard to parse those things. They dealt with some injuries across the board, but there was nothing that Steve Belichick did with the defense that really stood out that much, I would say. Right?
I don't know. I mean, I think the ability to take away big plays, to, you know, in the pass game in particular was pretty impressive.
I'm not saying it couldn't be worse, but this doesn't feel like it. It's just we're paying too much attention for this one to be a talking point. He's Bill Belichick's child.
If his name wasn't Belichick, would we have paid as much attention? I think that's a fair question.
And I think it helped in recruiting overall, but Jed Fish is the person who's recruiting these players for the most part. There might be some players who transfer because of it. The cross-country UW to North Carolina, like, Fusion's Prysock is not transferring to North Carolina. You know, I think what is most likely is that talent-wise, this UW defense after the transfer portal is going to be stronger in 2025 than they were in 2024.
I think that's true.
I think they will play better overall, irrelevant of this, because I ultimately don't think that having Steve Belichick meant like they didn't all of a sudden start recruiting way beyond their skis or something. So,
well, especially because it happened so late in the process.
Yeah. This, like most things, is fine.
Thank you for coming in around to my take. The 2025 Big Ten schedule is out. The Huskies will host Oregon in their season finale. Again, that will be the season finale Thanksgiving weekend, as we assume will be the tradition going forward. Ohio State visits the weekend of September 27th to open conference play. So there you go. Mark your calendars for that one.
Are you ready for there to be more Ohio State fans than you could possibly count in this game? The timing of it, having it be the first Big Ten game, is in September.
Well, the weather is still nice.
Oh, it is going to be ridiculous. And this is, I mean, when Ohio State must have come to Seattle before. Do I remember?
2007. Yeah, we were there for one. I don't know if I can remember who actually played.
I was going to say,
Ohio
the Huskies
State team.
They were so bad that that game just doesn't even register.
That was Jake Locker's freshman season.
But if for most Ohio State fans, they'll have never been here. That people will see that as a reason to come here. It is going to be ridiculous. But pretty close to the same time that we played Michigan last year, it's going to be a different looking Ohio State team. I'm sure that they will end up with very good players across the board. But interesting to see, and this is like kind of antithetical to say how college basketball does it, the year after their two players from Washington State are going to be in the draft is when they're going to play in Washington. So kind of sucks for Emeka Buka and JT Tuimoloau, but
it's a bummer for them. Obviously that's, you know, it's different in college basketball. Like you schedule those non-conference games. This was not their choice. Chris Wells was the star running back for this team.
Oh,
he was apparently a first round pick. I do not have any memory of Chris
Wells. He was on the
Wells.
Cardinals for a long time. Chris Wells. I definitely drafted in fantasy.
Their quarterback was Todd Beckman.
He just sounds like an offensive coordinator, doesn't he?
The name that most the wide receivers, they had Brian Rubisky and Brian Hartline. Dane Sonsenbacher, a very familiar
name.
Brian
Hartline will be back.
Yeah. Was this the Deontay Johnson playing running back for them? Nope, just a Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, that would not be the time. It would not make sense.
James Laurinaitis was the defensive star, had 121 tackles and 5 sacks that season, was an All-American. Cam Hayward was on the defensive line.
Okay.
That would have been...
These players do not sound like the number 4 team in the country, but...
Vernon Golston had Vernon Golston had 14 sacks. Okay, he was not awarded, so I didn't see him right away.
I guess defensively, they had some big stars.
Malcolm Jenkins.
Do you know who one of their linebackers was? This is how long ago?
No, I'm oh, Marcus
coaching.
Freeman. Wow.
Marcus
okay,
Freeman.
Wow. Oh boy.
No, that D-line is pretty killer. The defense was pretty killer. Malcolm Jenkins, yeah. This is like back when Ohio State was still a Big Ten team, before Ohio State was like a national level team in the same way.
Well, it was Tressel was coaching. This is not, you know, the Urban Meyer era.
This team was constructed like a Big Ten team.
So they lost the BCS championship to LSU that year, 38-24.
That's crazy.
Huskies lost that one 33-14. There was a long... was that the long touchdown? No, I'm thinking of another game. Anthony Russo got a 23-yard touchdown for the Huskies, and Lewis Reagan had a 2-yard run.
God, I loved Anthony Russo. Luke Fickell was on the staff.
Paul Homer got three carries at fullback.
Oh,
Marcell Reese
man.
had five catches for 66 yards.
It was long enough ago that a fullback got carries.
That is a long time ago.
But yeah, no, that was like an old school Ohio State team. Anyway, it's going to be massive for Ohio State fans. Otherwise, you look at it and you're like, okay.
It's
I mean, going,
manageable.
yeah, this is manageable timing when we're hitting these. I would rather, this is under the assumption that UW is even competing for a playoff spot at all. If you look at Ohio State as like Ohio State and Oregon being probably the two hardest games of the year at Michigan, really have no idea. Very difficult one. But having Ohio State early, usually you want to have that early on if that's going to be a loss, or a chance for a big upset, have that early on and kind of establish yourself. But all of the teams are going to look radically different. Ohio State's going to look pretty different next year. Michigan's going to look quite the amount of talent. They're going to, you know, things are different and their recruiting class is excellent, but Michigan's losing a lot of first round talent. And then Oregon, when you look at them, it's so much of the Oregon team. So the three teams that they're the three hardest games that they're playing are losing way more talent than UW is this year. So, and then the one that really stands out to me is like, oh fuck, that's going to be harder than we realize, is week 11 at Wisconsin, November 8th. I'm just like, you could pencil that in as a loss right now. Like, unless DeMond is really cooking, I just,
Do you think that would be a fun game to travel to? Or is November in Madison likely to be too unpleasant?
no, I think it'd be fine. I mean, that was the other thing that I thought was UW again, mostly avoiding. I don't know if this is intentional that they're doing this, but
Did
they're
they
really
put
not.
the West Coast games at the end of the season?
Yeah, there's not really any like real risk of bad weather games, you know, like it goes that one and then they're home for Purdue and then UCLA and Oregon at the very end. So,
I think that is definitely intentional.
but.
I did already check out a hotel in Pasadena for the weekend they're playing UCLA, but it turns out they're already expensive. They're aware that that game has been scheduled too. So there you go.
Pasadena hotels on November 23rd, 22nd are already expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I was there last weekend. 2 weekends ago, during a UCLA home game, it was Fresno State, so not the same degree of traveling contingent. But there was a lot of people in the hotel the day of that game for one
I
night.
do not believe that that is because I think that is just it is permanently that price.
Possibly, I'll go check out the weekend before or after as comparison.
I don't think UW football almost a year out is changing hotel prices that. I could be wrong, but I would be pretty surprised if that was changing hotel prices in Pasadena.
All right, let's talk about transfer news. The Huskies have already presumably added a transfer, not official, but Garion Hatchett posted on social media
Hello.
indicating he's returning to UW and reuniting with his brother Landon on the offensive line after transferring to Oklahoma a year ago. The Ferndale native started the season opener for the Sooners before suffering a season-ending biceps injury, which should give him 2 remaining years of eligibility. Hatchett started 4 games at right guard for the 2023 Huskies, so it's possible we'll have Hatchett's at both left and right guard this season.
I mean, this is a huge one. You know I'm excited. Every time they sign a lineman, especially after the Oregon game, you know I'm excited about it. But he was definitely somebody who, before the Kalen DeBoer move, he was going to be an important part of this offensive line.
No, possibly related to that, the biggest surprise among players who have submitted their notifications of transfer for the Huskies is guard, aptly named guard Memelaar, who was a starter throughout this season. So not a lack of playing time for guard Memelaar, but maybe seeing the writing on the wall there.
I get the feeling that UW is going to be extraordinarily active in the offensive line transfer portal, and I think the team may have informed guard Memelaar of this information.
I mean, it's a little surprising because I don't think guard Memelaar was the issue here.
No,
Like,
I'm
I
not
think it was
saying,
the tackles were probably, left tackle in particular, was probably the bigger weakness.
if you're going to what at the time was Steve Belichick and his Jed Fish, and you're saying, am I guaranteed, if they're having their postseason conversation, you're like, am I
Yeah.
guaranteed a starting spot next year or should I transfer? They're probably going to say, we're going to be active in the transfer portal. You know, like they also, if we're being honest with ourselves, might have had a conversation with the brother of the person who's currently on the team.
It does seem plausible that they had some awareness that that was coming. on I believe the opening day that the portal was available for transfers.
That it could have also just been like he knew that Landon Hatchett was coming and or Girion. Wait, sorry, which one is still here?
Girion's coming back. Landon has been here.
Girion's coming back. Okay. That Girion was coming back and decided to transfer rather than compete. It makes sense.
I mean, I think related to that is probably the other most surprising transfer news here is I look up the pronunciation guide since he's not come up on the podcast previously.
Tristan is how it's pronounced.
it's just Kelly Tufai was the left starting left tackle for the final four games of last season's after injuries to Sione Vaasola and Maximus McCree. He was a redshirt freshman, so someone who had moved into competition for playing time relatively early, but was not recruited by this coaching staff. And again, that's where maybe you learned, hey, we're going to be bringing in more people. We saw the size of the recruiting class they brought in, potentially, competition from below as well as from transfers. And then this one, a surprise, really only in terms of him continuing his career. Cam Davis, who spent 6 seasons at UW as running back, apparently set to get a 7th year of eligibility after missing all of 2023 due to injury. He was someone who played a much bigger role for the Huskies, 2 years ago when he was their primary starter running back than he did this past, or I guess he wasn't the primary starter, but a much bigger factor. We had 522 yards in 2022, and then only 44 carries for 190 yards this past season, backing up Jonah Coleman with Adam Muhammad also like moving into a larger role at the end of the season. Pretty clear he's going to need to look elsewhere to get more playing time.
I mean, we kind of talked about this last year, to be honest, which was the Huskies just kept signing running backs and the running back depth chart got pretty busy. And Adam Muhammad clearly is after Jonah Coleman next in line. So made a lot of sense. I love Cam Davis. He's awesome. And obviously wish him the best wherever he goes.
And this is the point I want to make. Like people, when they think about transfers, they think about it as being primarily about guys like Cam Ward and like these huge bidding wars for quarterbacks. But for every Cam Ward, there's 10 Cam Davises who is just transferring to get a chance to play more because of the fact that there are younger players at his position or a new coach. Cam Davis played for four different coaches at UW. It is a truly wild career that Cam Davis had. He was part of the last Chris Peterson season. Both Jimmy Lake seasons, two Kalen DeBoer seasons, and then the Jed Fish era.
Plus the interim coaches too.
Which, Bob Gregory?
Yep, that was one.
Yeah, okay. Edge Lance Holtzclaw, who helped seal this win over USC with his pressure on quarterback Miller Moss on his only defensive snap of the game. Also, submitting a notification of transfer. He was part of the rotation at the edge, but not a key fixture, even with injuries to Zach Durfee and Russell Davis II. Backup running back Sam Adams, the second son of Sam Adams, who had 8 carries this season, 31 total at UW in a career hampered by injury. You mentioned this backup safety, Tristan Dunn, the Sumner product fell in the depth chart this season, seeing just 17 defensive snaps, is a redshirt sophomore per on Montlake. And then a couple of walk-ons who saw some playing time, lent long snapper Cameron Johnston, who served as the primary snapper on place kicks this season with, wait, are they both named Cameron? Were both their long snappers named Cameron? Cameron Warchuk, snapping primarily on punts. Walk-on wide receiver Camden Sermon, who played primarily on special teams. And then redshirt freshman cornerback Curly Reed, the third.
So I kind of have come to in these last couple of days, really looking a little bit closer at the transfer portal. Obviously, things felt so different last year because so much of the team left. But the thing that I'll say that I'm impressed with Jed Fish and this current coaching staff by is basically everybody. So far, I'm going to knock on wood. We haven't seen what happens to Steve Belichick, et cetera. It's still relatively early, but almost every single player who factors into the rotation next season is coming back. There's almost nobody when you look at that where you're like, oh crap, that player is like, this would be huge if we lost them. And it was when Kalen DeBoer left. But the way that they've handled this and the types of players, again, I think they probably opened up some bag for somebody like Damon Williams and your more important players. But a lot of the transfer portal, the more that I felt about it, the more that I thought about it, like, yes, there are important players who are transferring. There are important players from big schools who are transferring. There's four-star players. It's kind of like there's a quarterback transfer portal, and then there's an everybody else transfer portal, especially if you're at the type of program that can pay the players, you know, what basically what they would be making if they're going out into the transfer portal. Because ultimately, at a lot of these schools, the money's going to be about the same. And for quarterbacks, there's a different budget.
That makes sense. Yes.
Would you agree with that? Oh, Connor Wegman transferred to Houston. Did that just get announced?
For the record, the walk-on long snapper was Caleb Johnston. They are not Bosam Cameron, which would have been a remarkable coincidence.
So, but there are good players to be found in the portal. It's just a lot of those have not come from...
Yeah, they're not going to be from other Power 5 teams.
No, they are, though. There are good players from other Power 5 teams. UW, what I'm saying, has kind of... I'll tell you, Arizona has a lot of good players in the transfer portal.
True. Yeah. I mean, I think if you have a disappointing season and it's after a coaching change, which, yeah, I guess that, yeah, that is credit to Jed Fish and to the...
You came around on crediting Jed Fish because this wasn't a disappointing season. But they made sure to take care of everybody that they needed to take care of so far. If you look at Dakario Davis, number 10 in the transfer portal, would we be happy about it? If you asked me right now, you could have Steve Belichick or you could have Arizona corner Dakario Davis. You could have Ephesians and Dakario out there. I'm taking Dakario Davis over Steve Belichick.
I mean, I know they played a 4-2-5 or something like that, but it was wild how many Arizona defensive backs have been reported as injury in the transfer portal. It's like, really? They have this many defensive backs that are notable?
So right, there are schools that are losing players that they don't want to lose.
True. Yeah, I'm not saying they aren't. All right, let's wrap up with the Seahawks, who, as you mentioned, got their...
Darian Mensah transferred to Duke? Sorry, this is the shit only I know about. You don't even know the fuck I'm talking about, but...
I don't. I'm not on Timothy Chalamet's level.
I fucking texted him. Timmy, did you know? Hold on. Darian Mensah. He had such an awesome... Okay. Sorry, hold on. Yeah, after... I'm shocked by that one. I thought he was going to go somewhere much bigger. But maybe Duke open up the bag. This is a person who was 20th in QBR. We're talking like Damon Williams type numbers. Which I do believe if you took Damon's entire season, he's ranked somewhere, he's right ahead of Will Howard, I believe, if he was eligible. I do know that Arch Manning's QBR is obscene. But
With his rushing value?
Yeah. Yeah.
Damon Williams ended up in 83 QBR, 83.3. So that would rank, sixth nationally.
There you go. But yeah, after Malik Murphy transferred, I guess maybe Duke opened up some money for, but yeah, the quarterback who transferred there, Darian Mensah, was like 20th as a freshman in QBR and transferred to Duke of all places. So.
All right, Seahawks, their most complete win since the game at Atlanta, 30-18 over the Cardinals. Wasn't even that close for a period of time in this game, I would say. And then people got, I think, a little too frustrated about the fact that the Seahawks didn't continue just completely dominating this game. But a comfortable win nonetheless, and a strong performance on both sides of the football for the first time really in a while.
Hell yeah, it was.
At least that's what I told the border agent.
You're like, I'm the guy from Talking Taco Time. Do you have those up here?
They have the other ones, but it's the American border agent, to be clear. It's crossing back into the U.S.
So you saw none of this game?
None of it.
Wow. Well, I you didn't exactly poo-poo me last week, right? You were a little bit more skeptical than I was, and I told you. Sometimes there's glitches in the computer. And this Seahawks defense, what they did, if at the end of the day, the stats didn't look that impressive, but still outgaining the Cardinals in a game that for more or less the entire second half was garbage time. A lot of the second half was garbage time, right? This is the type of game that you kind of just expect the Cardinals to put up a ton of yards in, especially. And the Seahawks gave up the touchdown in the second half, but I thought the defense played just an incredible game overall. The way that they're able to get pressure so quickly. It was funny, the first series of the game, I was sitting all alone, right? Like no children even around. And the Seahawks give up a touchdown to the Cardinals in the first series. That's the thing that happened, in case you didn't know.
I'm aware of what happened in the game. I was following it.
It really felt like, and you wouldn't know this just from falling on your phone, but I was just like, I'm fine with this. I am so totally okay with this touchdown that they gave up, because the Seahawk get off on the line that the line was getting was incredible in that first series, especially. And it kind of continued after that. And it's like, take a fluky touchdown, right? If it sucked seeing immediately, I felt like there was a little bit of a thing being drawn. Like the last time we saw Kobe Bryant against Kyler Murray, he was getting this incredible pick six. And then all of a sudden we see Kobe Bryant get burned for this touchdown, but Kobe got him back later. And the Seahawks defense, the way that they've been able to pressure, especially Kyler Murray, right? He ended up with a few more rushing yards in this game. This time they shut down Trey McBride, though, of all people. It was a very, very impressive performance. I think the Cardinals were a little overrated statistically in this one. And I think the Seahawks are maybe even kind of significantly underrated statistically at this point. But it takes time for these things to happen. But there's kind we're getting to the point that defensively, did they crack the top 10 DVOA wise?
They're in the top 10.
Okay. I think it's one of those things that you would say you should argue against is the trend line. But if we're looking at basically since this winning streak started, this is a top 5 defense right now. And the turnovers that they've been creating, the way that they've really limited some of these players has been very impressive. And the offense, again, even in the games, like they didn't play statistically. DVOA didn't like the Jets game, but it was like watching the game, they're not playing that badly. And I felt like even in this game, I think they could have played better, right? I don't
know.
Geno Smith misses Noah Fant, who is wide open by a yard, right? There were a couple of plays where it's like there was a fourth down that if there was a different situation, if they were down in the game, they probably would have gone for, they probably score. And they get the drive that ices the game at the very end. They just played a pretty freaking good game overall. And they ran the ball much better than they've ever run the ball. I think the long run kind of skews things a little bit, but success rate had to have been up there with the highest it's been all year running in this one.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, did you see the stats about, like, you know, first contact that it had been on average about 1 yard beyond the line of scrimmage for both Ken Walker III and Zach Charbonnet this season, and it was like over 3 on Sunday?
Oh, yeah. I obviously, where are the Cardinals defensively? Like, where is their defense ranked DVOA-wise?
14th.
You're probably, that is overrated. They're not actually the 14th best defense, but people are underrating just how impressive a performance this was for the Seahawks to go into Arizona and win this game as comfortably as they did. It's one of those things that after the fact, everything seems evident. Going in, they were underdogs in this game, in the same way that they were both of the Cardinals games. People are starting to figure out a little bit more, but like there is something happening with this team.
Are they? Have you looked at the line for Sunday?
Well, the Packers are actually good.
I agree that the Packers are actually good.
But the thing is, I think the entire
Also, like people aren't, yes, the stats aren't necessarily adjusting for the Seahawks Twitter moving to blue sky. And the Seahawks being 4-0 in the blue sky era.
Yep. You have to factor that in. No, but the entire NFC West is a little bit underrated overall. People are like, oh, the NFC West, some crappy team's going to get in. Not a great record, right? But I believe the entire division is top 16, 17 in DVOA. These are all good teams. There's no elite team. But they are all good teams in the NFC West.
That is correct, yes. Seahawks now comfortably the best point differential in the NFC West at plus 19. San Francisco is even. Arizona now negative, as are the Rams.
I was just thrilled with this game overall. And I especially, coming back after giving up that touchdown, just how calm I felt. I haven't felt this way about the Seahawks, definitely since Russell Wilson is here. This is a different way, and I'm feeling about this team the way I felt like some of the Russell Wilson teams. And I don't know. There's a confidence that's building around the team. I'm telling you, there's something happening.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because people think of Arizona as a house of horrors because of a number of injuries that happened there over the year and the 6-6 tie and then the game that was canceled there in the Super Bowl. The Seahawks have more wins at State Farm Stadium than any other venue in the NFL since it first opened, and have won 5 in a row there, dating back to the 2021 game against the San Francisco 49ers that was moved there due to COVID protocols in Santa Clara County. Looking ahead, Ken Walker, the third day-to-day after undergoing additional testing on his calf following being ruled out last week. It'd be interesting if he does play to see how they're going to manage time between him and Ken Walker and him and Zach Charbonnet. Like, I think last week was more about the offensive line, and particularly there was a lot of discussion about, changing the blocking scheme offensively, and then also just getting more comfortable with Satoa Laumea there at right guard. Like, that was the bigger factor than Zach Charbonnet, but also Zach Charbonnet is a little more decisive as a runner than Ken Walker III often is. And I think that worked well on a lot of those counter plays that they were running.
I totally agree. I've always liked Zach Charbonnet. Tough times earlier in the year when Ken Walker was out and he did not look very good. So I don't want to just be like, oh, I've loved Charbonnet should have been the guy the whole time, because we didn't feel like that for some of those weeks where Ken Walker was out early on. But this one was, obviously, I mean, I think it was his best performance in the NFL. And the way that Charbonnet just hit some of those holes was pretty impressive. I don't know. I'm feeling very good about it overall. But let's talk about the Packers.
Let us indeed talk about the Packers, who are third in the NFC North at 9-4, and also number 3 in the NFL in DVOA, which is both a statement on how good the NFC North is, because the Detroit Lions are number 1 overall in DVOA, and also a statement on the fact that they're a little bit underrated by their record. Their losses this season have come by 5 at Philadelphia in their season opener, which is their only loss outside the NFC North.
In Mexico City as well, right?
Yeah. In Brazil. Yes.
Oh, Brazil. Sorry.
Yeah, I saw that as at Philadelphia on the schedule. But yeah, neutral site. By 2 at home to Minnesota, by 10 to Detroit at home, and by 3 at Detroit on Thursday night last week. Jordan Love overall is 11th in EPOE plus CPOE composite, as well as QBR, after ranking 9th in QBR last year. But he's been balling out since the Week 10 bye and presumably getting healthier after he missed a couple of games with the injury he suffered in that opener in Brazil. He is 3rd in EPA plus CPOE since the bye, behind Jared Goff and Josh Allen. So really almost MVP level performance. It's an incredibly balanced receiving core with 4 wide receivers plus tight end Tucker Kraft, all between 45 and 60 targets. We're hoping to see them throw it to Dontavian Wicks, who's averaging 5.3 yards per target, catching just 45% of targets his direction. Everyone else is at least at 58%.
To both have such a low yards per target and a low completion percentage, Jim.
Well, the yards per target is, completion percentage is part of that, so that's how it's possible. But still, how is it possible to be that much worse than everyone else is the question.
Yeah. Okay.
Josh Jacobson, pretty effective out of the backfield. That's a rare option for them. Romeo Doubs hasn't played since November 24th concussion, but was back at practice Wednesday, still clearing protocol. They also are looking like they might get tight end Luke Musgrave back after he was designated for return from IR following ankle surgery. It's been a top 10 rush offense with Josh Jacobs stepping in for Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon missing the entire season. Haven't really missed a beat there. Defensively interesting, the Packers rank 13th versus dropbacks, 9th versus runs. Opponents are completing 68% of their passes, but for a relatively low 10.6 yards per completion. They have an average sack rate, with only Rashawn Gary having more than 3 on the season, but they're number 4 in the NFL in forcing turnovers. Safety Xavier McKinney has been a big part of that. He's tied for the NFL lead with 7 interceptions after 9 total in 4 seasons with the Giants. and looking like they'll be healthier in the secondary with cornerback Jaire Alexander back after he's played just 10 snaps since October due to a PCL sprain. He packed practice fully on Wednesday. Have you seen much of this Packers team?
I mean, I watched the Thursday night game last week. I'm trying to think. I definitely watched the week one game. Beyond that, I don't know, but this is, they have these two games back to back. It's part of why the Seahawks playoff odds still are not that great. I do feel like it's every week that we leave these games and we're like, all right, now's the time. Now the playoff odds are going to be good. We've won this game and they're getting better. They're getting
I mean, they're better
significantly
than
better than they were.
50-50.
So, but these two games back to back are why DVOA in particular, DVOA sees the Packers as a different type of team than probably the rest of the league sees them. Obviously, the league sees them as dangerous, but DVOA has them as the third best team in the league, right? And if you were to rank these two games that they have back to back between the Packers and the Vikings, this is the more difficult one. They're the better team. This also is. If the Seahawks were able to win this, they would have an extraordinarily good chance of making the playoffs because they would have the same record as the Packers if they won, and having that tiebreaker as well. It gives them a couple of different avenues to get there rather than just the division. Definitely need to be cheering against the Rams this weekend. Need to be cheering against the Commanders as well. But having those other avenues to the playoffs, I think, is what's most important for the Seahawks right now. So that it's not just can you stay far enough ahead of the Rams or if the 49ers go on a run or Cardinals or something, right? Stay far enough ahead that you don't want that Week 18 game to matter, right? Or you want it to matter, but you want to be in either way. You don't
Yes.
want Week 18 at LA to be a win and in situation. The NFL might want it to be a win and in situation, but if you're a Seahawks fan, you don't. And this one would go a long way to making that happen, especially opening up those other avenues. It's also probably the second hardest game, the third hardest game, I'll say, that they'll play all season. So at Detroit is harder. Hosting the
Yep.
Bills is probably harder, but I don't know. I think the Bills are a better team than Packers are. No matter what DVOA says, I think the Bills are a better team, and they're a harder team to beat than the Packers are.
I mean, the difference there is pretty marginal. Now, the other factor here, in terms of difficulty of this game, is that it's a Sunday night game. And it feels like the Seahawks have a lot of these night wins over teams that are like better on paper at the end of the season. And the one I really go back to is 2018. I think that was Patrick Mahomes'
Yep.
first season as a starter, and they beat them in week 16. But before the Geno Smith start in place of the injured Russell Wilson on Monday Night Football versus the Saints in 2021, the Seahawks had won seven in a row night games against opponents from either the Central or the Eastern time zones. Overall, in the Pete Carroll era, against those teams in night games, they were 15-2. So you could also count last year against Philadelphia in week 15, I think, is an example of this.
Yeah, Drew Lock beat the Eagles.
Yes. They had some wins over Green Bay in those situations. The Seahawks have been very tough to beat at night at home against East Coast teams.
Do we think that's a timing issue? I actually
There is some general evidence about this above and beyond the Seahawks.
that there's like a body clock issue going on.
Yes.
I'll take it. I'll take whatever it is. I mean, it's so funny because when we see it, we're just like, yeah, it's an electric environment. When you come in here, it's an electric environment on a Sunday night game or whatever, on a night game against a team from this time
But
zone.
clearly has not mattered against teams from other t from the Pacific time zone in particular.
It matters especially more in teams from the Central or Eastern time zone.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Niners in night games here. Like, I guess those environments haven't been so electric, in part because the Niners have been thoroughly dominating those games.
Look, Steve Aoki ruled. I mean that is that worth a point in this game? I think it probably is, right? If these teams, I actually feel like, what is the spread? It was Packers minus three,
2.5.
2.5. I think people are giving the Packers a little bit too much credit right now. I think people are underrating the Seahawks a little bit in this one, and It probably should be something like minus one either way, right?
I think when you incorporate that element, yes. I mean, I guess no, it's down to minus three now. It opened minus 2.5.
So people are pounding the Packers right now in this game.
Not pounding, but more money is coming in on the Packers.
For the line to move too. I mean, it's going to be a real test of Mike McDonald and his defense. You know, seeing basically, it was interesting. I saw an interview with Matt LaFleur complimenting Mike McDonald, and they're all kind of part of this generation of coaches, right? Like the Mike McDonald is basically defensive. Matt LaFleur is defensive. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, they're all kind of part of the same generation of coaches. Mike McDonald's a little bit younger, but they all sort of speak the same language and are trying to do similar things. And when Matt LaFleur was complimenting Mike McDonald, I was just like, yeah, of course. Like these are their dudes, you know? This is the generation of coaches that they are. Mike McDonald has been exceptionally good, his defenses, these last handful of weeks. Before then, not so much. It really is about, is the defense that we've seen two times against the Cardinals, against the 49ers on the road, is that what this defense is? I think people have been really not respecting the 49ers overall too, and
I
just
agree.
how good of a win that was. It was kind of shocking with the look. I don't know if I don't think the 49ers are going to make the playoffs. They are still talent wise, excluding nobody, the best team in the NFC West. And I think they're going to beat the shit out of the Rams. That game's on Thursday,
That game is on Thursday.
on Thursday Night Football or in San Francisco, right?
I do not know that, but I can look it up.
I think they are going to beat the shit out of the Rams. Like, people are not understanding how good of a win that actually is,
Yes,
and
that will be in Santa Clara.
judging too much by some extraordinarily difficult games that the Niners played after that. And obviously one without Brock Purdy. So you kind of throw that one out, and then you're playing a game in the snow. But the running backs just doesn't fucking matter. Give me anybody. I don't care. It does not matter. So people are not respecting how good of a win that actually was for the Seahawks to have. And I think DVOA wise, the Niners are a top seven team.
They
They
are
did that
number
on the
seven.
road. So to do that, Green Bay is probably a better team, apples to apples. I'm fascinated to see this Mike McDonald defense against them and what they can do. Green Bay's going to score points, but I think I'm going to have a better than 50% chance of victory in this one, given everything, given all of the things that we're talking about. It would be great to sweep these two games. Best case scenario, they probably need to split the two with the Vikings and the Packers. There are going to be a lot of Packers fans in the house, maybe less than if it would have been in the beginning of the season, earlier in the year, because people are less likely to want to come to Seattle. There are going to be a lot of Packers fans in the house. This is going to be the first time that Seahawks fans are fired the fuck up. It is a
I hope
Sunday
so.
night. Every week, the crowd's been getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And I think Seahawks fans are engaged in a way that they weren't 4 or 5 weeks ago when the Seahawks were losing games to bad teams at home. So I'm excited to see it. I would love to see some of that pressure. Like, Jordan Love's good, right? But some of that pressure, the way it comes, just the way that they terrorized Kyler Murray in that game, that he's good at dialing it up, and this is a healthy D line now. There are a lot of ways to go at him with spoon rushing, with the different edge rushers back. Uchenna didn't play a ton, but another week of Chenna Nwosu with the line sort of more solidified for another week. I'm feeling pretty good about this team. I don't could care less whether Ken Walker plays or not. I would rather him not play, probably. But also Ryan Grubb's starting to figure it out, what Ryan Grubb is doing. And I think that's the thing that people underrate is just you can't be a good NFL offensive core. It doesn't happen magically right away. You're not starting out with a bag of tricks before you see whether shit works or not. And then you take the what makes the difference between good and bad coordinators is not coming in with a bunch of great plays. It's being able to adjust and understanding what things are working with this team in this situation. They've got the screen game going. It looks a little bit like a college offense. They're a little bit more vertical than a college offense. The third downs that they ran, you didn't see any of these. Getting the ball to Noah Fant on third and ones was just like, thank God. Also, there was a catch that Noah Fant made over his shoulder that was awesome. But like, I love AJ Barner. There's a difference between AJ Barner and Farrell
Oh, yeah.
Brown
Yeah.
and Noah Fant. And having all three of them is huge. I personally think it's basically Fant and then Barner right after him. Ryan Grubb is figuring it out on these third down plays. They're not just running the ball at the line anymore. He did an awesome job against Arizona and how he coached that game. And if they do anything like that, I think this Mike McDonald defense can make enough big plays, get to Jordan Love. They forced, the thing was, like, the sacks weren't astronomical against the Cardinals, but when you
only
factor
two of them,
in
right?
All the holds that they had, they were brutal holds in that game. And the Cardinals weren't able to get the ball downfield. So I'm feeling pretty good about this one. And again, the environment's going to be great. And the Packers are starting at a disadvantage because of time in this game.
All right, you said a lot of things there.
Yes.
Noah Fant's return is important because if you were trying to sort of understand, we haven't said the name Jaxon Smith-Njigba yet during this podcast. And it's an important one to say because he just continues to be awesome, particularly in third down scenarios. But like, if you were trying to understand with Jaxon Smith-Njigba breaking out over the second half of the season, why hasn't the Seahawks offense been passing game been better? I think the fact that you weren't getting much production from the tight end position was a big factor in that for a period of time. So Fant helps that. Defensively, like, they've faced some good offenses in this stretch where you could go back to the Rams game, Ernest Jones' first full week of practice with the Seahawks. I think that's where this started defensively and has been going since then. So that's the 4-game winning streak plus that loss to the Rams where the defense played well and Geno Smith let them down. Over that stretch, like, they've faced the Rams.
A little too harsh to Geno, but okay, yes.
I mean, there's some sort of Geno Smith dialogue happening out there. Blissfully, I don't see it. I am unaware of this Geno Smith dialogue that seems to revolve around people wanting to see Sam Howell. But Geno Smith had just about the worst day in terms of turnovers that you could possibly have against the Rams, and that's why they lost the game, even though the defense played quite well. I think that's, you can understand that Geno Smith is a good quarterback and also acknowledge that. In that stretch, the Rams are a top 10 offense. The Niners are a top 10 offense by DVOA, but they haven't faced an elite offense since the Bills wrecked them at home in Ernest Jones' debut. And so this will be an interesting test from that standpoint. And I'm with you. I think they're ready for it. I think they're going to play better than expected. I don't know if I have it better than 50%, but I do have it at least at 50% percentage chances of victory.
All right, you're going with 50?
For a second consecutive week.
Zero takes, Kevin.
Maybe a third. I don't know.
All takes Tristan, no takes Kevin.
No, I definitely had the Seahawks favorite against the Jets. That's right. When they were under, when was the last time the Seahawks were favored in a game? That's a great question. All right, let me crank on that. Will you give a percentage chance of victory?
Were they not in the Rams game? Were they not favored?
I mean, the Giants, they
definitely were favored, but...
I don't know if they would have been favored in the Atlanta game.
No, definitely not. I think it's like 56%. I am feeling very good about this one. Maybe even higher. I'll go up to a full 61%.
Like, it'd be a good bold prediction that the Seahawks just kind of like completely dominate this game. I don't think that's likely to happen, but I think it's not implausible. And
it's not the end of the year pod yet. We don't have to make bold predictions.
Well, it's coming soon.
You have to give no takes and I have to give all takes. 50-50. Completely neutral. Either they will win or they will lose.
Where do you find out whether they were favored on stathead.com?
You should probably check out bookies.com. I hear that's a reliable source.
Okay. Well, I'm going to look somewhere else now. Continue filling.
That's it. That's all there is to say.
But I still want to look this up and get this in the podcast.
This is the first ever time you're like, the podcast has to keep going.
Well, we're only 5 minutes into this game. It may not be that competitive.
Spurs in the championship this year.
Okay, the Seahawks were last favored October 6th against the New York Giants. They have been underdogs in their last 8 consecutive games, during which they have gone 5-3, and won 4 in a row.
I mean, that may continue next week as well. I feel like if they beat the Packers, there's probably a good chance that Vegas comes around. And Vegas is, the Vikings just aren't as good statistically as the Packers are.
Correct.
But I think there's probably a good chance that if they win, if they lose this game, they will not be favored again. against the Vikings. So it'll be until Chicago. And
oh, my, can't guarantee they'll be favored then.
I think they'll be, well, who knows, right? We don't know anything about the future, but I think there's a good chance that they will be.
I think we do know some things about the future.
We know no things about the future.
Says Nostra Tristan.
Right, no, well, takes Kevin says the future is somewhat knowable.
The future is, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for here. You can put percentiles on the future.
I'm looking forward to the atmosphere, to the environment. Like I said, every week, I think I said this about the Cardinals game. It's the first time that I remember, I don't know, maybe I'm just looking back too bleakly, but we've seen a lot of just kind of shitty football in Seattle. Not for the Huskies, of course, complete domination at home. Watch out, Ohio State. But for the Seahawks, I mean, this season, there just hasn't been that much to get excited about overall. You know,
we'll see what happens with UC Davis and Colorado State, but how long would the home winning streak be by the time Ohio State comes to town if they win both those games? Like 23?
Infinite. We should start making a graveyard.
That definitely doesn't come back to haunt you.
You will never lose again if you make one. But I'm just excited about going to this game and the atmosphere and the environment. This is a time, like I said, it's going to be cold. It's going to be gross. And there are going to be a lot of Packers fans in the house, but I think that Seahawks fans we've really rallied around this team. And I think people are feeling it a little bit. Something feels different right now.
All right.
You,
well,
when you have a defense, that's when the crowd feels it.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Chicks dig the defense.
Well, people also look forward to our year-end review podcasts, and we have them coming for you starting next week. Still TBD the exact schedule, but should be something in your podcast inbox on Monday morning. So hope you all enjoy that. On that note,
thanks for listening.
Thanks.
We call it a feed. Let me queue up my podcast inbox.
All right. Remain calm.
Remain calm. Are you okay? Let's talk more about Roki Sasaki.
What a natural transition. I mean, he can't officially sign until January 15th. I mean, he can commit before then, but. And guess what? If he signs before next week, it's not going to be with the Mariners.
Wait, why?
Because it'll be with the Dodgers. Or the Padres.
Why would the timing change?
Because if he's going to make an immediate decision, he's going to go to one of the obvious teams.
That's not fair. Okay. Why are you assuming the Mariners aren't one of the obvious teams? Only the Dodgers and the Padres are the obvious teams?
I mean, do you want me to go to, like, see if there's odds somewhere on which team sign with? The Mariners are not high in the odds. This is strictly a Mariners fan invention.
Okay. Honestly, this might be the Mariners conversation.
I think it is.
I do have to read you an email.
Okay,
though.
Bookies.com. I mean, granted, right. Like, who knows how...
Hey, it's bookies.com.
They have...
What are you, some kind of wise guy?
They have 8 teams listed. None of those 8 teams is the Seattle Mariners.
Really? Not
this isn't strictly a Mariners fan invention.
Who are the 8 teams?
The Dodgers and the Padres.
Can I guess? Okay.
Yeah, okay. You're probably going to get those ones.
I feel like the Giants are on the list.
The Giants are not on the list.
Okay. The Yankees.
They are on the list.
The Red Sox.
They are on the list.
The Mets.
They are on the list. You've got to name the top 5.
Okay. Are the Blue Jays on there?
They are not.
Are the Angels on there?
They are not.
Okay. Are the Astros?
Nope.
Who are these teams? Are the Cubs? A lot of
the
Japanese
Cubs are
players.
On the list, yes.
Okay. So 2 are left?
You've got all the logical teams.
There's 2 illogical teams.
I mean, just, I don't know that they're illogical. It's just like they don't as follow as naturally from the history of Japanese baseball players.
What league are the 2 teams in?
There's one left from the NL and one from the AL. There are no teams left from west of the Mississippi River. The Dodgers and the Padres were the only 2.
Okay, because I was going to say the Rangers, maybe, weirdly. Are the Phillies
The Phillies are next.
and
One
the
team left.
AL team? I had the Orioles, Cleveland. And you said it wasn't the Blue Jays. I'm kind of surprised by that. Just because a year ago they signed Shohei, if you remember.
I forgot about that. The whole private jet, the plane tracker.
I was in Baltimore while that was happening.
Now,
Okay.
MLB.com does have the Mariners as one of the intriguing teams for him. It appears they've chosen one team from each division, and the Mariners are
Intriguing.
the team from the AL West.
Okay, wait, so.
And you know who's on the list from the NL Central?
Who?
The Pittsburgh Pirates.
Of the list of intriguing teams. I'm
Yes.
assuming this
Somehow
team
the
is.
Padres are more intriguing. The Dodgers are not on this list of six teams.
I'm assuming this team is in the AL East, right?
That is correct.
Okay.
You do understand geography. I mean, obviously some AL Central teams are east of the Mississippi,
Wait,
but
who's the
yes.
Red Sox, Yankees, Rays, who I don't feel like it'd be the Rays, right?
It
Orioles.
is the Tampa Bay Rays.
I that is there's no fucking chance that Roki Sasaki is signing. Hey, bookie.com.
Bookies. It's not just
Bookies.
bookie.
Bookies, two
It's
bookies. It's
multiple
like,
bookies.
hey,
It's
what
not like
bookies over here?
the listener.
Bookies.com.
First off,
It's a reputable source, people. Can you
I
see
feel
my
like
hand
this
motion?
voice is a troubling stereotype of Italian Americans.
Americans.
In a
What?
week where there have been no stereotypes at all of Italian Americans.
I can do it. This give us the one thing we have. Hey, it's bookies.com. He's gonna come down to Tampa with us.
I feel like we don't even really have that one because it's such
We
an
moved from
East
the
Coast
city down to
Italian thing.
Tampa.
It is not referring to Italian Americans who moved from the hills outside Genoa to Seattle. That is not the stereotype.
Bookies.com. I have to read you this email.
Okay. Is it from
So,
Wikis.com?
bookies.com is coming to Tampa. Okay. Should I say this person's name? I don't. Okay. I'm going to say this is a producer for the program LiveWire, executive producer for LiveWire Radio. Have we
Okay.
talked to them? And so they reached out about a band that I work with being on LiveWire Radio, including an episode with like Paul F. Tompkins, which I'm like, they should do that. They don't live in Portland. But anyway, my response was, hey, love Luke, love the podcast. He was on my podcast about Taco Time recently, and I connected him with the people. And the person responded, all caps, Tristan, you are the talking Taco Time guy!
Wow.
Exclamation point, question mark, exclamation point, question mark. Wow. Hats off to you.
Hats off to
Hats off to you.
First off,
Reputation precedes itself, people.
I'm offended that you're the talking Taco Time guy
Yeah, just
as
me.
opposed to one of the talking Taco Time guys. I mean,
Nope.
look at, let's be clear, if any of us is the talking Taco
I've
Time guy,
been to
it's Chris or
every, I've
Randy. It's
worked
not
there.
either of
I've
us.
been to every Taco Time. I'm in a Taco Time bike group. I have all sorts of Taco Time tattoos and merch. If you combined all four of us into one Taco Time person, you and me contribute nothing to
I
that.
did not put this in the toast, but farewell to Alicia Vermillion, who is leaving her post at Seattle Met Magazine, where she wrote the story about Taco Time and the other Taco Time and Talkin' Taco Time.
Where's she going?
But nowhere specific at this point.
As yet unannounced.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, when work intersects with your personal life, I guess, of Taco Time fandom,
Like when I talked to Jamal Crawford about Taco Time.
I am going to respond, yes, I am the Taco Time
Oh
guy. There are
no.
no others.
Oh
It is me alone, long monologue of a podcast, talking Taco Time.
are we still in the Mariners section here?
I don't think we were ever in the Mariners section.
Oh
Oh,
I thought we decided to just do that as the Mariners section.
no, I do not agree. This is all post episode talk.
Okay.
We could
Wow,
have
that
the
was good stuff
Sasaki.
on Roki Sasaki.
a different Roki Sasaki conversation. Let's have a radically different one as if this didn't happen. And be like, can you just consult to see if there are any websites that might have odds on this? Like almost like a bookie, but there are two of them on the internet. A pair of them making a website, not DraftKings or anything like that.
Bookies.com was one of like, I imagine it like pets.com. Like it was in the bubble. Oh, jeez.
Bookies.com.
Clown penis.
I love when your sources for things, like people just don't even. Like there will be like a fucking news post or whatever. And it's like source bookies.com. Now that I have a mustache, I can really talk like that. It's weirdly more natural.